No, Madonna puttina.
Eccomi, you're with David Farini, your Lega host. It's time for another tasty tray of Italian football. I'm joined by Giancarlo Rinaldi, a reputable voice in calcio and one of the most dedicated fans of Fiorentina that you can find. Today, we're going to discuss a recent article written for Forbes Sports entitled Fiorentina's Early Season Form Revives Memories of the Battistuta Glory Days. That link will be in the show notes. You can find Giancarlo at Ginkers on Twitter, G-I-N-K-E-R-S, and he also hosts the Rigore Pod with his cousin Marco, and that is at Rigore, R-I-G-O-R-E, Pod. And you can find that on Twitter. You can find it on all the platforms as well if you want to listen to that one, where they discuss a lot of Fiorentina, a lot of Venezia as well. And the latest episode discusses Pippo's appointment at Salernitana. Let's get into the Forbes article. A purple haze is drifting over Italy. Only twice before in the modern era has Fiorentina started a Serie A campaign so brilliantly. But can they keep it up? There's no superstar striker or world-class goalkeeper, nor is there a player transfer spending policy that matches the likes of Milan or Manchester United. Yet somehow, Fiorentina heads into the international break in third position of Serie A. Any Viola fan will tell you that supporting their team is a roller coaster of ups and downs, twists and turns. Not since Giancarlo De Sisti's championship winning side of 1969 has the club won the league title. Following the halcyon period of Graziani to Baggio, Battistuta led the rebirth after demotion in the mid-90s. At the turn of the century, bankruptcy plummeted Florence into chaos until Luca Toni and Gilardino brought stability back. Over the past decade, a severe dip in form and leadership induced two lower half finishes. Then by May of 2019, Fiorentina had entered the relegation discussion again, sinking to a paltry 16th place finish. Days later, Rocco Commisso, the Italian-American entrepreneur who is the majority owner of Mediacom and the New York Cosmos, spent 170 million euros approximately to acquire the club from the Della Valle brothers. Since then, the Tuscans have steadily improved on the pitch from 13th to 17th in Italy's top tier throughout four seasons. Finally, the project was back on its feet, and despite selling off their biggest names along the way, Fiorentina's rise was just gaining height. Midway through 2023, its coach Vincenzo Italiano, who's reached the next level, leading the Gigliatti to the Italian Cup and UEFA Conference League final within weeks of each other. Many presume that Fiorentina had overachieved, yet the 2023-24 campaign has so far produced a polished run, 7 matches undefeated, and that win over Italian champions Napoli in the last round before the international break was truly a statement of intent. Giancarlo, considering there are no superstar strikers or a world-class goalkeeper, can Fiorentina keep this up? And if so, how?
I think it's going to be a tough ask for Fiorentina to keep up this tempo without a prolific striker in the team. You know, they're off to a great start apart from the heavy defeat at Inter, but the game against Napoli really showed that they're capable of going toe-to-toe with one of the best teams in Italy and coming out on top. It is an overall team play that's got them to where they are. You know, they've not relied on a deadly finisher to get them into that position. People have been chipping in goals from right throughout the side, but it would help if one of their strikers was to start to hit a bit of a run of form. Mbala Nzola's only got one goal, and that was a late strike in a 3-1 win, you know, so it wasn't consequential in any way. But if he could hit form, I think he offers a more established presence, a more regular Serie A scorer than Lucas Beltran. Obviously, there's great hopes for him in Florence. They love an Argentinian striker, as you know. And I think, though, he was bought more as one for the future. I think he could be a slow burn success. He looks like a good footballer, and I think he can start to contribute goals, but that might come later down the line. I think Nzola's more a known quantity and should be able to chip in 10 to 15 goals in a season for this team, maybe not the 20 or 30 that you would have got from Battistuta or more recently Vlahovic. But, you know, I think that the team play is really what's encouraging. And even without someone hitting the heights, a striker hitting the heights, I think they still can go and make a challenge, maybe not for top four, but certainly for top six.
Yeah, well, at this point, it is definitely a purple haze atop the Serie A standings. It's that fearless brand of football that has put Italy's traditional heavyweights on notice that we all love to see. The Viola has earned 17 points during the opening eight games to claim equal third place before we head back in from the international break in the Serie A standing. Something achieved only twice before in the 3 points for an era win at Fiorentina. The first time back in 1998, the Batistuta glory days. The other time was with Ilicic in charge in 2016. 25 years ago, it was Fiorentina that flaunted all the glitz and glamour associated with 90s Italian soccer. Giovanni Trapattoni's opulent squad featuring Francesco Tolo in goals, Thomas Repka in defence, Rui Costa in that intimidating midfield. Batistuta unleashed a hat-trick of hellish fury at the San Siro early in the 1998-99 season, with Traps 11 winning six of the first eight matches that time. Fiorentina had rattled the Serie A establishment with that exciting brand of football that we all remember, spearheaded with a 21-goal contribution from their Argentine talisman. These days, no such luxury is afforded to Italiano. Fiorentina's transfer strategy has heavily relied upon selling its top goal scorers to those ravenous predators further up the calcio food chain, a policy which has previously brought the club back to square one and I'm sure has frustrated the likes of Giancarlo and other Fiorentina supporters. After a 20-goal haul back in 2017, it was Nikola Kalinic who moved on to Milan for 25 million. Federico Chiesa and Dusan Vlahovic were later sold to Juventus in 2020 and 2022 respectively, reaping that collective profit of 138 million euros in the kitty. And with this in mind, the catalyst of Fiorentina's ascension under Italiano is the redistribution of goal creation and goal scoring responsibilities to other areas. Giancarlo, obviously the Batistuta era counted on having that prolific goal scorer. What area or which player can Italiano now exploit to achieve the amount of goals required to make a realistic challenge for the Champions League or the Europa League, for one of those two, for qualification for next season, seeing as you already mentioned possibly making it to the Europa or Champions?
Should they not find a top striker, though, I guess? If neither of those hit men can really hit their stride, then they may look in January if they're still up the top end of the table to get someone. But I think there are other alternatives because they do offer a lot of attacking threat from different positions. I think that's part of the secret of their success, really. Nico Gonzalez, I think, is a man definitely who could have a double-figure goal season in him this season. He's just signed a new contract to 2028. They're building a team round him, really. So, you know, he's certainly one player I'd be looking at to up his goal tally for the club. Giacomo Bonaventura is obviously off to a great start, but I don't think you can expect him to do that. Possibly Jonathan Ikone, now that he's back to fitness, could chip in a fair few goals. He's not delivered in that sense since he came to Florence. But I think it's just the array of attacking options that they've got, really. They've got different men for different games who are able to pop up with goals. So, you know, Gonzalez is definitely the man most likely of the non-striker to have a breakout season, if you will, and hit double figures in goals and really carry them on into Europe. But as I say, it's really the way that they score goals. Even Biraghi, Martinez Quarta, has been coming forward from the back and scoring goals. And so I think that's really what's pleasing about this team, is that it can score from almost any position.
Yeah, they definitely can. I think it's a leaf that they've taken from other clubs, perhaps a little from Spalletti's Napoli, where he was pushing up different players at different times to add some support. Definitely saw Martinez Quarta up against Rudy Garcia's Napoli pushing forward. He was playing behind two attackers for the first quarter of an hour in that game, and that's why Fiorentina was so strong early on, and they really took the initiative. They took the game at the Maradona by the scruff of the neck, and they went there with a specific purpose. And so far, it's that Commisso era where we've seen a whole bunch of strikers leave in specific transfer windows, profits made. Even Cabral was sold at a profit. So kudos to Daniele Prade as well, the sporting director, and the rest of the team. Your opinion on the Commisso era, is it better or worse than expected?
For me, I'd say the Commisso era is probably about on target for where I thought it would be. To put Fiorentina back into the top four is always going to be a tough ask. And, you know, especially with financial fair play regulations kind of ties his hands in terms of acquisitions. You can't go out and just spend on players. You know, as you've pointed out in articles you've written, the overall spending at Fiorentina is a lot less than, you know, many of their rivals, particularly across Europe. So they've had to kind of invest in other things. And the opening of the Viola Park is certainly a big statement from Comiso and a big statement from the club about, you know, that's his legacy, I guess. And going forward, you know, that hopefully they think they will produce players, you know, encourage players to come and see that it's an ambitious club and also help them to develop their own talent, you know. So that on the pitch, it's been a struggle at times, that there's no doubt about that. And, you know, this sort of constant hope of building a new stadium. I think obviously if he'd been taking over a club in America, he'd have built a new stadium by now. But Italy being Italy, that kind of thing takes a lot longer. I think he's resigned to maybe just having a restyling of the Artemio Franchi. So, you know, I'd say that overall, I think that it's about, I tend to be more a glass half full person than a glass half empty. And I'd say that he's done pretty well. And, you know, although we've struggled to find that prolific striker, I suppose, the team's done pretty well. Not everyone's pleased with Comiso. I mean, I think there are critics who feel that he hasn't spent as much on the pitch as he could have. I wouldn't fall into that category, as I say, because I think that, you know, there is unfortunately a limit there on what Fiorentina can spend, and they have to try to spend smart. And, you know, overall, I think pretty much they have.
There'll always be detractors and there'll always be fans of every president. I've seen that at Napoli with Aurelio De Laurentiis. But so far, Vincenzo Italiano after the game stated his satisfaction with his side, that they were clinical enough to be able to execute the victory. He's happy with the squad until now, at least until the international break. Do Italiano's satisfaction, do you think that's because of, or it could be perhaps it's a reflection of his own progress as a coach leading Fiorentina, as he did at Spezia, as he did at Trapani? It could be on him that Fiorentina have come this far with his specific system at play.
I see Vincenzo Italiano as the added value of this side, really, that, you know, he gives them that extra splash or something that takes them from maybe being an average squad to being a pretty good one. I think that, you know, he's tactically quite clever. He's always trying to do something different, certainly. It doesn't always work. And, you know, that high line, certainly, and playing it out from the back can give fans heart failure. But he does seem to, as I say, come up with solutions. He's integrated Arthur Melo into this team pretty quickly. The tactical innovation of pushing Martinez Quarta forward into the attack from time to time has worked out pretty well. You know, so he's shown himself to be pretty astute. I mean, he rarely picks the same team. In fact, I don't think he's picked the same team twice in a row in the whole time he's been in charge, or at least not that I can remember. So, you know, he is a tinker man in that sense. But you'd have to say that to get that team to a European Cup final and a domestic cup final is quite an achievement. In the end, they were lost. And so, you know, for people that only value trophies in football, I guess he was a failure. But with a club like Fiorentina, that was really a pretty successful season. As I say, it would be great to crown it with some silverware, I think, really would be the icing on the cake. But I think he's done a pretty good job. He's constantly in motion on the sidelines and constantly changing outfit as well, which I do find quite hilarious. Often to be seen with a gilet 1 minute, a polo neck the next. And, you know, if you cut to the bench and saw him in a full three-piece suit, I think you wouldn't be surprised. He's a man of many, many costume changes. But he's also a man of versatility tactically as well. And I think that's his greatest strength. You know, as I say, that he can switch things around. He's looking to do things differently. And, you know, I suspect that he might be one of the parts of Fiorentina we tend to lose players every season, and he might be the most prized asset at Fiorentina right now that could be prized away either during the season or, you know, next summer.
Yeah, well, many were wondering what would happen without Gaetano Castrovilli. He's injured. He's got that long-term injury. But the burgeoning renaissance of Fiorentina has been heavily inspired by the ingenuity of Giacomo Bonaventura. Now in his fourth season at the Artemio Franchi, the 34-year-old Sparkle has been recognised by Italy boss Luciano Spalletti, who was then called up for the Euro qualifiers against Malta and scored a brilliant goal against them for 1-0. That got Italy going, and they ended up winning that 4-0. Perhaps they needed him against England. Bonaventura has proven to be the most important component of Italiano's system and remains the only midfielder in Serie A with 5 goal involvements. His can't finish against Napoli, taking him to 99 overall. And this is what Italiano said: "I ultimately couldn't do without his ability to get away from defenders and his quality on the ball in this particular game. And we also saw that for Spalletti and Italy. Giancarlo, is Jack Bonaventura Italy's best midfielder at the moment?"
I don't know if Jack Bonaventura is Italy's best midfielder right now, but he must be pretty close. Or I was going to say, like Brian Clough, he might be in the top one, because he's certainly in the form of his life. This start to the season, goals and assists aplenty, and then just crowned by his lovely goal for Italy, you know, making him the oldest player to get his first goal for his country, I think, for Italy, is just that, you know, that was a stamp on what a great start this season it's been. But that's a continuation of last season's form. It's not like this has just come out of nowhere. He just seems to be reveling and playing for Fiorentina. And you get players like this that I think just learn more and more as their career goes on. Yes, he'll not be as pacey as he was. He doesn't move around the field particularly rapidly, but he's got an instinct for being in the right place at the right time to score goals. He's also got an eye to put his teammates in on goal, and you know that makes him a great asset for Fiorentina. Obviously, with a slightly older player, you're always worried about tiredness and injury, especially with Fiorentina having another season in Europe. But at the moment, you know, I'd certainly struggle to see any Italy players. I always rate Nicolò Barella as one of the best in Italy, but he's hit a bit of a flat spot in his form, and I don't know who else you would put into the mix from that Italy team that played against England. You know, I'm not putting Brian Cristante any higher than Bonaventura or Frattesi or the rest. So, you know, I think he's definitely got to be in the mix when you're discussing the very best midfielders in Italy right now.
Absolutely, he's been phenomenal this season. Before you be talking about heart failure with Italiano's defensive line, how he plays that high line, the defensive fragility is that direct consequence of Italiano's system. They're a joy to watch when they gel in the final third, though, showcasing that clear intelligence and clinicality in the penalty area. Despite being 10th in the league for XG, that's expected goals, Fiorentina is second for goal-creating actions. Bonaventura having a lot to say in that regard. Third for goals and assists per 90 minutes. Fourth for assists and possession. And fifth for progressive passes. All that despite them being 10th in the league for XG. That is unbelievable. In defensive midfield, you mentioned Arthur Miller before. His introduction has been pretty good, more than made up for Sofyan Amrabat's departure to the Premier League. Now, there's a very interesting stat that I speak about in the Forbes article, Fiorentina taking on the richest clubs on the planet. Since the beginning of 2023, Fiorentina have scored 87 goals in all competitions, only fewer than Manchester City and Real Madrid, incredibly, in the 5 major European leagues, and 2 more than Bayern Munich and Manchester United. A truly astounding statistic, considering that the others are worth a collective average of €948 million, compared with La Viola's €255 million. Fiorentina also sits in 42nd position, one place above English second division club. That's Serie B of England, Leicester City, in Transfermarkt's ranking of most valuable teams in the world.
I hadn't actually realised that Fiorentina's goal scoring record was quite as impressive as you pointed out, but you know, that just shows, I mean, I think it underlines what an attacking team they are. I mean, yes, they'll have played a lot of games because they've been in, you know, the Conference League, and they went a long way in the Coppa Italia as well. So, you know, in 2023, they've probably played more games than most teams as well. But regardless of that fact, you know, they are a fun team to watch, particularly this season. And they do, you know, they do try to score one more goal than the opposition. There definitely, as I've said before, They've got a range of ways of unlocking a defence, and be that through a team move. They're also pretty good at set pieces. They've got aerial threat through Milenkovic and through Nico Gonzalez, one of the most springy players I've ever seen. So, you know, they can unlock a defence pretty well. But they're also, they're just a team that looks to boss a game, really. You know, they do go out. I mean, I don't know what their possession stats are this season, but I know last season they were certainly amongst the highest in Serie A. You know, they go out to try to play their football regardless of the opposition, and that can backfire. As it did against Inter, they struggled to impose themselves on that game, to be honest. They were quite submissive and unlike themselves, but when they do go out and play their football as they did against Napoli, then they always look like scoring goals. It does come at a price at the back, because they also look like they could concede against almost anyone. And when they come up against, I think, smaller teams that are more stubborn and sit in more and, you know, make it difficult for themselves to be broken down, then that does present them with some problems and headaches. But as I say, Italiano's shown himself, I think, to be getting better at working out how to break down those teams. So, you know, they're fun to watch. I think that's the bottom line. If you're a neutral and you've got a free evening and you see there's a Fiorentina game on, I'd definitely advise you to tune in, because I don't think you'll be bored. I think you'll always be pretty entertained.
Yeah, I'm with you, Giancarlo. I was definitely entertained despite seeing them beat Napoli. Everyone knows that I like the Partenope, but watching Fiorentina do the job on them was amazing. I was applauding Italiano and the players. He said that they achieved their first objective. So he's doing well to take a little bit of the pressure off the side. Definitely entertaining. The form guide over the past 5 Serie A matches presents Fiorentina in first place, Giancarlo. One more than actual leaders Milan, but there are 30 rounds to go. Italiano has rightly refused to entertain the chatter of Champions League qualification. So while Inter, Milan and Napoli all have predetermined destinations, Fiorentina still yet to adjust its navigation system. The other sides have their bombers up forwards. Fiorentina have that strategy where they want to disperse some of the responsibilities throughout the rest of the squad, Giancarlo. It's not only the spirits of yesteryear that have restored a nostalgic sense of hope. Around Florence, Fiorentina is a formidable opponent, but do they have the stamina to see out the rest of the campaign with the same vigour? Giancarlo, thank you for joining us once again at Lega Football. You can find him at Jinkers and also on the Rigore pods. In the article, we also talk about Michael Caiore, the brand new Fiorentina superstar. He played on Kvaratskhelia and marked him out of the game for long periods of that game. Definitely check the rest of the Forbes articles out. Emmett Gates also with Forbes Sports. So once again, Giancarlo, thank you. If you're new to the Lega Football podcast, go and check out our YouTube page as well. We've got interviews with the great Hakan Şükür, who is a Turkish international, record holder of the fastest goal in a FIFA World Cup. That is a 5-part series. There's also the Maradona mural tour of Naples. When we visited last season, we did the Lega Football tour where we did 4 games in 5 days, including the Champions League. We followed Napoli's progress throughout their historic season of winning the Scudetto for the very first time since the Maradona days. Emmett Gates is one of the contributors. He'll be back. Hopefully he will check in from South America, where he'll be going to some of the local games. We've got plenty of other contributors. Andy Wallace, hopefully he'll be back. Jura from the Netherlands will also be joining us once again. Joe Fischetti from the Forza Napoli pod and plenty more. Ci sentiamo.
This is Lega Football.